Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What can you do when your partner just never initiates sex? I mean, how do other couples keep their sex life alive long term? I mean, it's a serious thing.
It is.
Now, joining us to talk about this is, oh my God, my favorite two guys, Sam Garazzini and Alipaki Yee from the Gay Couples Institute. Welcome to the show, guys.
Hello. Are you guys sitting? We're going to talk about sex today.
That's hilarious.
But let's remember.
Are you guys sitting?
We are on radio. We got to keep it PG because I don't want to get fired.
It's a good goal. It's a good goal. I don't want to get fired.
Now, I love every Tuesday where we get to talk about these relationship moments because there's so many aspects and layers to just a relationship. And I'm happy that we're here because especially, you know, we're here for everyone. This radio station is here just not for gay people, but also for heterosexual people. But it's one of those things where sex can just really be just can impact your relationship in a very big way if it's not going right.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why we wanted to put this out there. This is a hot topic that a lot of people want to talk about because the lack of sex like it used to be in the beginning, that is actually a normal process. That's what happens. But there's also fundamental things that we see with couples that keep it alive long term. And what are they doing? So we want to talk about that.
So, okay, speaking of that, how do successful couples keep their sex lives, you know, alive long term? Because, you know, people, especially I think with gay guys or just gay people in general, I think there is a conversation that I feel like we've had before where we talked about, you know, gay men don't necessarily have to be monogamous. They can, you know, explore different kind of avenues of their relationships and be like, oh, this is kind of how we spice up the relationship.
Well, I think the way we were discussing it before was that being gay, you're inherently seen as like being sexually different.
Yeah.
And so you don't necessarily inherently have to like abide by a bunch of norms. And so I think in this conversation, it's kind of interesting, like how I found in my very unscientific study of gay couples that have been together for a long time, like a lot of them were open and I found that really interesting. And so it made me start questioning like, well, what's that about? So how do you guys find that successful couples keep their sex lives working for the long term?
Yeah, so we'll take on the open piece and the monogamy piece as kind of a separate thing from this, but I really did just want to talk about like, you know, what is in the zone of what are couples doing to maintain their own interest long term. And so it makes me think, like, when you go into a bookstore, at least here in America, and you go to the relationship section, you'll see, like, four sections devoted to communication, and then one section next to it devoted to sex.
As if
and
it hardly matters.
Yeah, and and what's in that section is stuff like, you know, the Kama Sutra and all that stuff, like put this here, do this like this, lick this way. And that's really a product of our culture and how we kind of divide this. We divide communication from sex. And there's a huge, awesome study that was actually done on this, and it's in a great book called The Normal Bar, where it looked at tens of thousands of couples, most of them straight, but we can assume that this generalizes to the gay community too. And what are couples doing across the world in order to keep their sex life alive long term?
Yeah.
And what it saw over and over is that couples that have great long term sex lives talk about sex a lot.
Interesting. Because, okay, let's talk about this because I feel, and this is just a personally thing, there could be a situation where, you know, sometimes your partner may need sex more than the other partner. Sometimes the other partner's sex drive isn't just at the same capability. Is that something that you need to figure out in the dating stages, or is it something that you kind of just continue to go in time? And I guess, is that a deal breaker in some ways?
I don't think that would be a deal breaker. And as you're bringing up, Ryan, talking about sex, people have more sex by talking about more sex. So more often than not, sooner rather than later, I would say, yes, definitely talk about sex. One thing that we have found over the years that really work for couples that they like is a scaling question. So you say to each other, 1 to 10, 10 being you're really in the mood, 1 not at all, that the couple ask each other, where are they in that moment?
Yeah.
As a way
of... like a frequent question, you mean?
Yeah, it's like, so I think the question becomes like, you know, when somebody says, hey, let's have sex, then what it's like is, oh we're going to have anal sex. We're going to do the whole thing here. And what we found is when couples say it as like, hey, I'm in the mood, on a scale of 1 to 10, where are you as far as your, you know, interest in hooking up right now? And they say, well, I'm a 7 right now. Where are you? And then your partner says, well, I'm actually just a 4. The question then becomes, well, how do I get you to a 5? Not how do I get you to a 10?
Okay.
In that increment, in looking at it like that, that's where the communication really starts to take hold, and the pressure goes down of, oh, I got to put out, basically. Oh, we got to do the whole thing. Because what we see from couples that have great long-term sex is they make a lot of things sex. They don't just call, okay, we need to have oral sex, and then we need to do this.
Okay.
It's just those things.
So I'm guessing I think sometimes even talking about, like, even when you're dating or even talking about sex, it can be very uncomfortable. It can be, I feel like, some, you know, in this, like, our culture, a lot of people are like, oh, I'd like to keep that private. I like to keep whatever that is in the bed, or, like, you know, I don't like to talk about it. How do you even bring that up? Because you're saying, yeah, couples should talk about it, but you also don't want to offend your partner if you're just like, honey, that ain't it.
One thing that we have found that really works is to talk about why talking about sex is so uncomfortable. And so they don't even need to actually talk about the subject, but they can really talk about kind of the elephant in the room, if you will, and just the process they're going through, that this is an uncomfortable topic. I grew up in a household where this wasn't something I necessarily discussed.
Same.
Or I was taught.
Same. Yeah.
So, you know, so it is uncomfortable for people for different reasons. And just to even broach the subject to say, this is an uncomfortable conversation for me.
Well,
and to just ask why.
When you're navigating, you know, dating, when kind of should you first have sex? Like, does it take a certain amount of dates? Like, oh, on the third date, I can give him this cookie? Or does it, like, what's the rule there?
You can give them the cookie on the first date if that is what you two are comfortable with.
Okay.
So I think this really depends on the person. I think in the era of Me Too and consent, definitely we would say, definitely ask for consent and make sure it feels right. And it does start with just talking to them. Sometimes you feel it. Sometimes it's there. And it's good to talk about that. You know, we oftentimes just do things and never talk about it. And I think it is wonderful to be able to talk about that. So it could be the first date. It could be the third date. You could wait a month. You're not going to know until you ask.
Yeah, I've had relationships where we waited all this time to have sex and then, like, nothing happened. And then I had a relationship where we had sex, like, immediately, like, I think the first night, and, like, we ended up having a great relationship. So, like, I think it can really vary. I don't think, like, waiting a certain amount of time ever really has, like, a really major impact. I wanted to ask you both about something a little bit more personal. I dated someone a while back who experienced sexual assault and had a really negative relationship after that, where the person said some really hurtful things to them about sex, and, like, that really impacted their sex, their feeling sexual or feeling like they were comfortable having sex. And it really had a negative impact, or I won't say a negative impact, but it really hurt the ability for us to be able to have, like, a healthy sex life. What would you do in that situation? How would you, like, be able to bring that person along?
You know, that's a really great question. I know that came up a lot on our Facebook page when we put it out to our audience. What do you want to talk about today? They wanted to talk about things like this too. So, Jared, I really appreciate you bringing that up. So sexual trauma, even if it's someone's, you know, ridiculed us or said something really demeaning to us, that is something that we can really carry forward, because we're super vulnerable. And we're vulnerable about our bodies. We can't change our bodies. This is the body we're in. And if someone says something, you know, I don't know the situation in particular, but if something really mean was said at one time, it can carry forward. And what we see from couples that navigate that well is they, this is where the talking about it and making communication about sex and kind of taking it slow and allowing that past trauma to be here in the present with you guys and finding ways for you to help him correct through that old experience. That's how relationships in the present can often be healing to the things that happened to us in the past.
Wow, yeah. I've dealt with something like that as well with my last ex as well. So that it was very interesting for us to navigate. But I think even I kind of want to go back to what we were talking about earlier, especially when you weren't kind of taught or raised to be comfortable around sexual topics, or especially for me, I was raised in a very, you know, religious household. And it was one of those things where that was just never anything. I think everything that I kind of learned about sex was just through kind of experience, but it still kind of made me a little uncomfortable even figuring out my own body. And do you think that really plays a part into being able to initiating sex, is kind of being comfortable with yourself?
You're talking about like self-esteem issues?
Yeah. I think that plays a huge, I feel like it could, because I dealt with
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. I think it also can make people timid and shy and withdrawn. So that is absolutely something to keep track of and be aware that that is something that is present in your mindset.
Well, I really just appreciate everything that's got this conversation, because it's been one of those things for me. I think it's one of the, like, sex can just be very difficult, and I think we have fun with it and we like to talk, like we can joke around, but when it really gets down to it, you really want to be able to, I guess you don't want to have that name that are like people to talk about you afterwards being like, that was the worst experience
absolutely,
I've ever had. Like, you don't want that to ever follow who you are.
Yeah, and I mean, well, we kind of talked about this a little bit at the beginning, but are there things that LGBT couples can teach hetero couples about sexuality?
Oh, yes.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so glad you wanted to finish on that note. That's actually what I was going to say. So in the Journal of Homosexuality, the country's leading relationship researcher, John Gottman, said in 2003 that actually straight couples have a lot to learn about sex from gay and lesbian couples. And that what he saw in the lab that they used to have in Seattle is gay and lesbian couples are very quick to talk about sex and just to make that kind of atmosphere just part of them. So a gay couple will say like, you know, kind of, you know, I feel like messing around right now. Or they'll say like, hey, check out that dude over there. Isn't he hot? And a straight couple, that is not allowed. And that plays, and I'm generalizing, but by and large, he would not see straight couples say things like that. Whereas we report that our sexual relationships with one another are much happier and healthier than the general straight population. So he really attributed it to the quality and the quantity by which we just talk about sex in our relationships compared to straight couples.
It's really interesting. It's funny because I've always said that that straight men have a lot to learn from gay men about being emotional and being open and being who they are and kind of being able to explore like the spectrum of all kinds of things. So it's kind of interesting to hear this like more scientific perspective on relationships and sex. So,
well,
you're exactly right.
Oh my God, Sam and Alapaki, tell everyone where they can find you, especially on more information about this.
So I would tell everybody to go to gaycouplesinstitute.org, look at the article section in our blog, and there's a whole part of things that we've written on sex and sexuality. One of those things will also take you to our quiz, which one of our four communication styles is what we call the sensualist. And it's somebody that just approaches the world from a physical perspective, and that's okay. And they kind of evaluate the quality of their bonds with other people from that and that's okay. So I would say if that's part of just how you see the world, take the quiz, learn about it, that's for you. And then look for other people that are going to be tolerant of that. And there's no reason to sex shame yourself.
So useful.
Oh, my God. These guys, I'm telling you, Hear Me Out Tuesdays is like one of my favorite segments that we ever do.
For sure.
It's incredible because I don't have to pay for anything.
that's why it's incredible?
That's the cherry on top all the time.
Not the information
after
or anything
half
like
an
that.
Hour.
Exactly.
Well,
after half an hour, you feel better.
Exactly. Thank you guys once again for joining me. Guys, Sam Garazzini, Alapeki. I like to think about our live studio audience. Sometimes they're here, sometimes they're not. I don't know. Maybe they're at the concession stand.
I think they're getting food.
Here they are. Tell ya. We got your back, Sam and Alapeki.